You are listening to The Secrets of Data Analytics Leaders, hosted by Wayne Eckerson.
If I had had a little more structure, a little bit of a blueprint or some coaching, if there had been resources for me to read up on how other people have done successfully.
My name is Wayne Eckerson. My job is to help data and analytics leaders succeed. In these podcasts, I talk with experts who share the latest thinking and innovations in our space. I'm glad you've joined the conversation. Welcome to the Secrets of Analytical Leaders. Our topic today is data products. Most data leaders want to deliver data products, but few are actually doing it. Let's face it, most data teams today function as internal service bureaus that fulfill customer requests that come through ticketing systems, email, handwritten notes, or calls from colleagues looking for a favor. Most teams work double time to keep their request backlogs from ballooning from weeks to months to sometimes even years. In this environment, few data leaders have time or capacity to switch from a project management approach to a product one. Now, even if data leaders had time, most wouldn't know how to make that transition. Most have no experience in product management, nor do they have a good idea what a data product actually is. So asking data leaders to deliver data products is like asking them to build a rocket ship that can take them to the moon. Fortunately, I'm joined today by a data leader who is a strong proponent of running data teams using product management principles. Henrik Strandberg is a seasoned data transformation leader who, for the past 25 years, has helped numerous organizations bridge gaps between business and technology. In stints at publishing and gaming companies, Henrik has developed a unique understanding of what it takes to build and deliver data products at scale that delight customers. Henrik, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Wayne. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's dive in. You've led major ERP and digital transformation initiatives at large companies. How did you ever get to become a data leader?
That's a great question. When I joined this company, they were right in the middle of a seven-year ERP transformation project. And one of the main and biggest components was just about to kick off for migrating all our product data from a variety of publishing apps into Oracle, right? So this is the processes where you create a business case, where you define the product master data, where you do the procurement of the products itself. Now, the previous releases in this ERP transformation had been a little bit problematic, and there was a wide recognition that we needed to do things a little bit differently. Notably, primarily, they needed a stronger business leadership, a stronger business ownership of the final solution. And that's where I came in. I had pretty comprehensive experience of doing transformation projects themselves. I'd worked at Warner Brothers doing a business model transformation. Was pretty significant. I worked for Sega, the video game company, with a transformation of the publishing model. At Pearson, before this ERP transformation project, I've worked on an enterprise risk transformation project. So pretty good comprehensive experience of transforming processes from something that caused a little bit of problems into something that worked better.
So
trust and reputation in that process.
So you did such a good job in the ERP transformation, digital transformation. They said, we're going to give you the toughest job of all. You're going to manage all of our data.
You said it.
But it sounds like as part of the last ERP transformation, you were managing master data, which is certainly a core data activity.
That's right. We were lucky, fortunate that way, that we could keep many of the folks that had been seconded to from the business to support the ERP transformation. We could retain them and shape the core of the future state data management team. So, I mean, we're talking hundreds of years of collective subject matter expertise in data management and data governance and data stewardship that formed like the core of this new data management function.
Yeah, terrific. So what, as a data transformation or ERP transformation leader, what were the core principles that you brought from that work into the data management side? And then we want to move and get into the discussion of data products, which is what we're here to talk about. But let's just talk about how you set up your data team for success.
Right. It goes a little bit hand in hand with data products, I think. Again, my background before book publishing came very much from video game publishing, which is extremely customer-centric. Everything you do, you measure your performance by how the customer perceives your product. Right? So if you think of it this way in terms of an ERP process or data management process, right, your job as a team is you build solutions to customer problems, right? The customer has a problem. Someone needs to build a solution.
Right.
Now, ask yourself, who decides? Who gets to decide what the customer problem is? Right. Is it my team? If it's my team, we are a product-centric organization. But if the customer tells us what the problem is, then we're being customer-centric. So I think that was very much the mindset and the approach that I took in shaping this data management team. But our job is to service our customers. They tell us what their problems are. Our job is to navigate what's going on to collectively come up with a viable solution.
Right? So that's really interesting. To become a truly effective data product team or product team, you really need to be customer centric. And maybe that's what defines product management, is that you are going to take a customer first perspective on whatever it is you build and deliver. Is that true?
I think so. Now, I mean, there are very successful product centric organizations also. There's no necessarily right or wrong, but I felt that a product-centric approach when it comes to data management or building enterprise support business information systems in general, you often fall into the trap of building stuff that your customers don't need, that they don't want. You're wasting time. You're wasting energy. No one understands what you're really doing and why it costs so much. Right? So I think the way we approach building data products, very much as so. All right. The data product is the solution.
Yeah.
Customer comes to us with a problem. There are many ways to deliver a solution. One common way is, I'm sure you've heard about the like chewing gum and duct tape. We can come up with a manual workaround. You can solve a problem sometimes pretty quickly with some sweat equity, right? You can also solve it by building a data product. Something that is discoverable, it's reusable, it's sustainable, it's scalable, it's measurable, etc. Right? Mm-hmm. So you develop a structured solution to the customer problem, as opposed to like the manual workaround, the hacktastic Franken solution.
Yeah,
and that's a little bit how I would define the difference between just doing data management or actually building data products.
Yeah.
When you build a data product, you deliver a structured solution.
Structured solution that's reusable, it's measurable, as you say. It's probably packaged with metadata so people can really evaluate it before they even use it.
Absolutely right.
Okay. So most data teams not only don't know how to be product management teams, they certainly don't know how to be very customer-centric, you know?
Right.
So... But you were in some ways kind of fortunate because you had this team that you kind of brought over into the data management world, and you kind of recast them into this customer-centric organization that was building data products to meet the actual living needs of those customers. So tell me about the CCT and how that played a vital role in becoming customer-centric and product-centric.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, so we refer to as the CCT team, so change, comms, and training, change management.
Comms is communication, so change, communications, and training.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think regardless of what you call it, this is a fairly standard function in a transformation project. It's like the interface between the actual delivery and build team that designs the new software and the user community, right? So CCT is that interface. So we kept that concept around when we shaped the customer-centric data management team as well. If you think of it this way, if you're building products, I mean, any product, let's say you're a bike company, you build bikes. If you don't have a sales team, a marketing team, and a team that actually works with the customers of the bikes, pretty much what you're going to end up with is a very, very full warehouse of bikes. Right. They're just sitting there gathering dust. Right?
Yeah.
And I think that that same paradigm can be translated a little bit to data as well. If you don't have that interface between the customers and the data warehouse, you're going to end up with a lot of data that is tremendously expensive to store, to manage, to maintain. You're going to get a lot of questions what value it adds to the business.
So I think what I hear you saying is that the key to customer centricity, product centricity, is to have this layer of people, real, honest to goodness humans, who can interact with the core end user, core customer, like kind of in a customer support role, sales role, marketing role, like almost all those roles wrapped together, and they kind of translate, or they go out and interface with the customer and they translate requirements back to the development team. Is that kind of what you're, yeah.
That's their job. They spend 80% of their time talking to customers.
Correct. Yeah, and so your team was actually pretty. How many people do you have in that role?
So I think we somewhere between 40 and 60, depending on what month you were looking at. We scale a little up and down.
40 and 60 of these customer relationship folks?
No, apologies. We referred to it as a services team. I think that was about 10 people.
Right? So you had 10 people out of 40 or 50 on your team as a whole. Right. And those people were... I think what I'm hearing you say, they're probably the most critical piece of the whole equation.
Well, it's certainly one of the critical pieces. So, I mean, just breaking down some of the responsibilities we asked that team to take on. I mean, they managed our intake process. They collected metrics of our team's performance. They measured customer satisfaction and usage of our data. They wrangled user acceptance testing. They organized training sessions. They did what we would normally refer to as customer service. Right? We maintained open channel Teams chats where anyone could jump in if they had a question. And we did that in addition to maintaining ticketing queues. So if it was just a little ad hoc question, how do I use this? We would then steer them into either we would file a ticket on their behalf. It was an actual defect or an incident that needed to be tracked, or we would point them to a training document if we suspect it was a user error. So exactly what you would expect. If you are a paying customer of a software as a service solution, you expect to get pretty good customer service. That's the function that this team built.
Yeah. So if you had to do it over again, is there anything that you learned in the process about delivering data products to customers that you would do differently?
Yeah, I mean, we learned so much. It's such a great question. Two things. I wish we had started sooner and prioritized building a structured data product organization sooner. We came out of release one and release two, and it was a very quiet hypercare. But we had a few additional modules that we needed to deliver before we could really start planning for and putting a structure on this. So start sooner rather than later. It takes time to fine-tune and get it right.
When you say start sooner, in terms of putting together the team or gathering requirements or understanding what it is you're delivering?
Yes.
All of that. Okay.
All of the above. Yeah.
So you were kind of thrown in and you kind of figured it out as you went along. So if you had to do it over again, it's like, I wish I'd known what I know now. We could start with a clean slate and create this product management organization from scratch.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the other. I wish we had started this a little sooner, started planning for it while we were still delivering the transformation project. And the other thing that I feel would have been tremendously helpful was if we had had a little bit of a blueprint. Remember, this goes back to about 2019. I don't think there was a lot of conversation about data products back then. This is something that I picked up a couple of years later. It's like, this is great. I really like where this conversation in our data community is going around building data products. If I had had a little more structure, a little bit of a blueprint or some coaching, if there had been resources for me to read up on how other people have done successfully and some of the pitfalls and some of the challenges, I think that would have removed some of the iteration and experimentation that we went through. So
what was the hardest part of setting it up? Was it finding the right people? You had all the people, I guess. They may not have been in the right spots.
Yeah.
You may have had to figure out who these customer relationship people were, who were better suited to that versus maybe development jobs. Or was it creating a product mindset or creating the team or development processes? What was the actual lift there at the beginning that you needed to do?
I think one of the biggest challenges that we had on my team is that we're still largely populated by subject matter experts, data experts, and we knew obviously the data intimately, right? And when you get to that point where you believe or you feel like you know the product better than your customers, that's a risky place to be. It easily you very high risk of falling into the trap of I see a problem in the data and I need to fix it, right? And then suddenly you start working on your own projects that deliver value for yourself rather than on projects or initiatives that deliver value to customers. Now, it might still end up being exactly the same effort, right?
Yeah.
Exactly the same data set needs to go through exactly the same kind of hygiene or cleansing exercise. But you do it because you said that it's important, not because a customer said that it's important. And that's a very, very different shift in mindset.
So that's people tell me that creating that product mindset is the most challenging thing. So what you're saying is that mindset is really, what does the customer want? Not what can I do to fix the data to make it as clean as possible? Maybe the customer doesn't want it or need it that clean, right? So let's key off whatever the customer is saying, which means you need to be talking with the customers all the time, right? And understand what their needs are.
This is incredibly hard. The data managers and the data governance teams, I mean, extreme pride in the quality of our data. We know where all the problems are. We feel very strongly and passionately that the data needs to be fixed when it's not as pristine as we would like it to be. Right? That data may not, if it doesn't cause issues for data customers consuming downstream systems, how do we prioritize that? That's a really difficult habit to break.
Did you guys have any difficulty defining what these data products would be in the first place? And I assume you're going to say, well, we have to go out to the customers and ask them what they want and really do a good job of listening and then documenting that. Was that a challenge at all?
Not really. Once we came to the point when the conversation around data products came up in the community like around 2022, middle late 22, when we started to look into this and put some structure around it on our end. I think we followed the best practices communicated elsewhere. I was like, all right, let's start small. Let's take the next request that comes in, we are going to deliver that as a structured, formal data product. And we worked very closely. We explained to the customer, here's what we're doing. This is why we're doing it. We believe that this will give you better visibility and transparency and ownership. Here's what we need from you, et cetera. So we talked them through it. They were very excited about being part of building this little pilot. We gave it a name. We gave it structure. We defined this product. We came up with a simple product data taxonomy. Remember, we were the master data, master product data team. We did the same thing for this data product. We defined the attributes by which we defined this data product and the different possible values for those attributes. All right, that's a great place to start when building a data product. How would you define it by a data?
So agree on the attributes that we're going to go into this data product. What about, you know, deliverables like SLAs, ROI, contract? A lot of people associate data products with contracts, right? That now the data team is on the hook for delivering this data product on our, you know, consistent basis with this level of quality through these distribution modes.
Yeah, exactly. Those become different. I mean, what we did, we simply had one attribute called SLA. And then we discussed with the customer in this case, what the different possible values could be to populate that attribute. Is it a 1-day SLA? Is it a 5-day SLA? What's the process to deliver changes? Or what's the SLA if it's just a data fix? Or if you actually need a configuration change? So it becomes a fairly data-driven exercise.
So I think what I'm hearing is there's just a lot of documentation that goes along with a data product, and your team has to be disciplined enough to take the time to do that.
Yes.
And maybe take the time up front to estimate what the return will be, the business impact in business terms, as well as take the time after the fact to record whether, you know, the product actually delivered on that value. Is that something you did too?
Yeah, spot on. Yes, documentation is, for better and for worse, it's a really important part of, I would say, any product management, almost, right? If you remember, this is the difference, again, between doing the chewing gum and duct tape approach and building something that's scalable and reusable, right? So it's important for a number of reasons. It really is the first step of building trust with the customer that you got it right. You commit, you deliver something that represents your formal commitment. This is what we're delivering. This is what you can expect. We will have done this number of test cycles using this subset of the production data, for example. We communicate that upfront clearly and publicly so that there's no like question marks. It's a very transparent process. And this is important for as a part to build the trust with the customer. They get an opportunity to comment, to chime in. If they see something they don't understand, they're open to ask questions. So, but it does mean that there is a fair amount of thinking that needs to go in to actually create this upfront documentation, which, of course, sometimes you get a little bit of pushback from the more fervent, agile evangelists on the team. Why are we spending so much time creating upfront documentation?
You know, I get from a lot of data leaders that, you know, the customer is willing, but they don't, in the end, deliver on their end of the bargain, right? They don't spend enough time with you. They don't get back to you soon enough on reviews. And did you find that problem?
Yeah.
How'd you get around that?
Well, they are in the driver's seat. It's their problem. If they decide how important it is to solve it. That comes back to the value. You touched a little in the previous question about how to measure value. I will ask you as the customer, how much is this problem impacting you? Ideally with a dollar number, right? But some form of estimation so that I can prioritize it, because we all have finite resources, right? And if you are unable to tell me what this is worth to you, that also means that I am unable to prioritize it. I'm already probably fully committed on other initiatives that do have an actual dollar impact.
Yeah.
Where I am working with a stakeholder who has told me this is a $200,000 problem to solve. Right. And you come to me and say, well, this is a big problem, but I can't tell you how big the problem is. I don't know what to do with that. Right. I will put it on my unprioritized backlog. and say, come back to me when you know what the value of this problem is.
Okay, I was about to ask you if you've ever walked away from a request, and it sounds like maybe quite a bit, if they can't quantify the value.
Again, it's really important that the customers know and understand that they are in charge here. In a way, they get what they pay for. And if they tell, and if they come back and tell me that I can't put a dollar number on this problem, then how do I know that it's the best use of my time to solve it?
And then how do you measure what the actual value of the delivered product is? Do you have any methodology for that?
Yeah, it's whatever the customer told me.
It's that simple. Okay.
If it was a $200,000 problem and we solved it, we will have generated $200,000 business value.
Oh, okay. Well, that's simple. I mean, we had a lot of discussions in the industry about how to measure the value of data. But if you have a data product,
it's very customer centric. And I didn't come up with a $200,000 number. You did, as the customer. Right.
And you're going to hold them to it. And did you ever come across a situation where they said it would deliver that much, but it didn't? And then what happens?
Well, they're the business leaders, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a great question. And I think especially for central data management teams where you don't, most often, there is no recharging. There is no intra transfer mechanic. There is no way for customers to pay for your services, right?
Right.
You are part of central overhead, and there's an expectation that you work for free, for lack of better word, right?
Yeah. Just to switch subjects, today a lot of companies are saying, hey, you know, we've got dozens of these data products out there now, and you know, a lot of them should be used by other people in the organization, and then they need a mechanism to kind of share this stuff, right? And a lot of organizations, data sharing is just non-existent. So there's this talk of creating internal data marketplaces to allow data producers to publish their data products and make it easier for data consumers across the organization to find, evaluate, and download or subscribe to those data products. Is that something you got into? I know you were pretty early into this whole data product thing, but
we didn't get that far, but that was definitely our intent, to build a structured internal marketplace, for lack of a better word.
Good. Yeah. So we're just starting to see technology coming out now to support that out of the box, right?
Yeah.
So maybe a related question is, how much reuse did your data products get once you created them?
So I can give one example. We built a pretty robust framework for a pricing model. We constructed some new attributes based on other, both application and master data attributes to derive a pricing model that could be used for new use cases. So we built that for one business division, and we then shared it with some other business divisions, and they really liked what we had done for them as well. So they adopted it on their end with a few modifications. And I thought that was a really good example of how we could take something that we have built and delivered to a happy customer, and then reuse it to create another happy customer with a very small effort.
Yeah. So data products equal scalability, right? When you can get reuse, because you've done all the documentation up front, you've defined what you're doing very carefully. You understand that you're meeting customer needs, not your own data needs. Those things ought to turn out to allow companies to reuse these things in a large fashion or scalable fashion. Yeah. So just to finish up here, you know, if you were to give advice to other data leaders who are embarking on this whole data product journey, what would you advise them at this point?
Yeah. I mean, the first one is customer centricity. Think long and hard what that means for your team and how you can, where you are today, and how you can get to a point where your internal data customers feel like they are in charge of driving priorities. It can be in terms of building a stakeholder map, for example, where you assign some key problems to each of the stakeholders on this map. You can then take that and share it with them so that they get some visibility into who they are and who's struggling with the biggest opportunities or problems right now. Right? So start out by identifying your customers. Reach out to them and talk to them. What are your biggest problems and how can we help? Right? How can we capture the value of your problems so that we can invest on our end to fix them? So I think that's number one. Focus on the build up a customer focus. The second thing, think about who on your team is best placed to kind of serve a little bit as the interface for customer care, customer service, whatever you want to call it. Make sure that it's someone's job to care about customers all day, every day. This should not be necessarily the job of data engineers or data scientists, unless they happen to be the folks who want to spend all day, every day talking to customers. And then the third one I would put a lot of focus on is building structure that generates data. So define your process, measure, capture the data of each process step such that you can report performance. How long does it take between a request coming into the top of the intake funnel until it's gone through triage and prioritization and you can start reaching back to the customer to capture requirements? It's 2 weeks maybe. Is that too long? Talk to the customers. Ask the customers. They should answer that question, not you. Do they want it to be down to 5 days? All right, then you need to figure out how to shorten that process on your end. But include customers in these conversations. You have a great team. You have a great process. Make sure the customers get an opportunity to comment on what you can do better at each step.
So I think the bottom line is create a true collaborative environment with your customers.
Yeah.
It's the key to product success.
You're all in this together. This is true teamwork.
Yeah.
If the business teams struggle with problems, they're not going to be able to generate the business that ultimately pays for the data team, right? It's as simple as that.
Well, great. Henrik, I think that's a great place to end. Thank you so much for your insights.
Well, thank you, Wynn. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening. If you like the podcast, please subscribe. If you want more insights on data or analytics, visit our website at www.eckerson.com.